Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. With every kernel, every grain, every seed, ADM sees possibilities to improve everyday life. ADM, resourceful by nature.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report for January 18, 2007. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. And later this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing. In agricultural news, the chair of the Senate Ag Committee and the chief of the Natural Resources Conservation Service are not seeing eye to eye on the CSP. Also, early estimates of damage of California's fruit crop are closing in on $1 billion. I'll have details of these and other stories this half hour. We'll also talk to a University of Illinois researcher who says prostate cancer patients should eat their broccoli and tomatoes together. And we'll have the latest on growing conditions in South America. It's all on the Thursday edition of your Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
Thursday afternoon, prices settled like this in Kansas City: March wheat, $4.95, down 3. May, $5.02.5, down 3.25. At the Chicago Board of Trade, March wheat, $4.71, down 6. May, $4.84, down 2.75. July, $4.89.5, down 3. March corn, $4.12.25, up 4.25. May, $4.22, up 3. July, $4.28, up 2.25. December, $3.91.5, up 2.5. March beans, $7.16.25, down 5.75. May, $7.31.25, down 5. July, $7.45.25, down 4.75. November, $7.67.5, down 3. March soybean meal, $2.11.30, down 2.50. March soybean oil, $28.82, down 15. At the Merck, January feeders, $95.27.5, up 1.35. February live cattle, $92.40, down 15. April, $93.55, down 40. February lean hogs, $61.80, down 7.5 on the day. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. Good afternoon, Dan.
Hi, Dave.
Would you characterize today's trading session at the board as consolidation?
Well, I think so, or let's say a cooling down, at least for a minute or two, breather, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, we did start off with some pretty good gains because we had some higher overnights. But those quickly faded, you know, in the first hour or so of trade. And then we went down to unchanged. And, of course, beans kind of went to the negative side. Wheat went to the negative side as soon as corn went to unchanged. But here toward the end, corn did pop back for a higher finish, 3 to 4 in the front end, roughly 2 cents in the back end. So I think the bull spreading activity that I maybe talked about earlier this morning might begin to start catching. I think that's the next phase in this market. If we're going to go higher, I think the function of the market will be to cut demand rather than increase corn acres. What tilts that, you know, we'll have to kind of wait and see on that, what may or may not tilt that. But that could be the next leg in this corn market, is to cut demand so we don't need as many new crop acres.
We continue in the March corn to bounce around that 417 to 419 area. Been up there about 3 days in a row now. At what point do you start saying, boy, that becomes resistance?
Well, I think it's resistance. The question is it strong enough to sell? That's probably where the question is, Dave. This 417 to 420 area, for those of you that have been following our work in AgriVisor, is that is the midpoint of the 96 lead futures chart gap. And that is a place that the market is at least starting to see some resistance. That does not necessarily mean that that's the top of the market, but it is a hard spot for the market at this point. I think the next level would probably be like 428, 429. You could probably, you know, and if that doesn't kind of stop the market, probably a complete filling of that chart gap, which would take you up to about 466. So, I mean, that's what I'm watching is how much strength corn's got to fill this chart gap, whether or not it can get it filled before turning south, if it decides to turn south anytime soon. So that's something to kind of watch on that front.
Looks like the beans didn't hold up all that well despite the positive day on the corn, and it begs the question, at least for me, of what about this relationship between the beans and the corn?
Well, 3 to 4 cent advance in corn is good, but that is just a almost considered a fractionally higher close compared to the closes that we've had here over the past 3 or 4 days. So I think in order to hold beans higher, to get them to close higher, corn has to put together a stronger day than 4 cents. And, you know, if corn had a 10, 12, 13, 14-cent advance, then maybe beans would have, you know, pulled themselves to unchanged or maybe up 2 or 3. But beans don't necessarily have to hold any relationship. I mean, a lot of the bean strength is based upon, you know, a big, large acreage of corn going into production in 07. And like I said, we may not need that big, large acreage increase in corn, and therefore the bean acreage may not shrink as much if the market rations supplies now or cuts demand usage now.
These seems to be pretty lofty levels, given the domestic carryout in beans and plus two words, South America.
Well, that all depends upon your definition of relativity. I mean, $7 soybean prices are not necessarily overpriced when you take into account cost of production, land rents, cost of land, and whatnot. I don't think, and we haven't really seen big yield increases in soybeans like we've had seen in the corn market. So these ain't necessarily, I don't necessarily call them lofty levels. They may be higher levels than what the market saw, you know, a couple, 3 years ago. But I don't think $7 beans are necessarily overpriced or anything. They're probably, you know, you've got corn prices at $4. So, I mean, bean prices, I'd at least be $7 at this point.
Are you more friendly new crop beans than new crop corn?
Well, you can, in a sense, you can be friendly distant soybeans based upon what we know today on fundamentals. And that's provided the South American crop continues to be realized. Let's say 108 million ton crop is harvested down there. And then you give the current carryover levels that we have on old crop soybeans. The soybean market, that's going to be kind of hold back price advance. It may even be enough to tilt them down for a correction before it's over with. But, you know, the market can only talk about acreage switches and this switches so much. And there's nothing that you can do about what's going to happen at this point. I mean, that is going to be an April-May feature in the market, and that depends upon how the weather pattern is and how the crop is, how the corn crop goes in the ground and all this kind of stuff. But, on the surface, you would expect to see larger acres of corn. Now that's debatable, you know, what we'll actually end up and what we actually need. If the corn market goes ahead and rations supplies now or cuts demand now, puts a lot of ethanol plants on hold for one reason or the other, cut back livestock herds and all that kind of stuff. So a lot of all that depends upon what happens in this marketplace, I think, over the next 30 to 60 days.
Thank you much, Dan.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. Taking a look at Mike Sola's Tuesday forecast tonight, mostly cloudy with snow showers in the north and a few flurries in south and central regions. Lows ranging from 14 in northwestern Illinois to 28 in southeastern Indiana. Be sure to join us this evening at Ty's Buffet in Olney for another one of our free AM 580 Agricultural Outlook panels. We have dinner at 6:30, a meeting at 7. Panelists include Tim Young of Ag Target, Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities, Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing, and Kim Hausapple of Effingham Clay. That's at Ty's Buffet in Olney this evening. Dinner at 6:30. The meeting at 7. There is no charge and no advance reservations are required. In agricultural news, Iowa Senator Tom Harkins says he wants to see farmers get more from a government program that pays for conservation practices. And Harkins scoffed at a USDA prediction that it could cost taxpayers $9 billion a year. When asked Wednesday at a Senate Agriculture Committee hearing what CSP would cost if all the caps were removed, USDA Natural Resources Conservation Services Chief Arlen Lancaster said a rough estimate would be $9 billion. Harkin, a strong proponent of lifting CSP restrictions, responded sharply, and this is a direct quote, "I think that $9 billion is a bogus number." Meanwhile, Government Accountability Office Acting Director for Natural Resources Lisa Shamus says there has been mismanagement of CSP.
For example, we found a producer received a CSP payment of over $9,000 and an equip payment for almost $800 for the same action, crop rotation.
Lancaster reacted strongly to Shamus's testimony.
NRCS has implemented a number of management measures to prioritize program spending primarily by delivering the program in priority watersheds, targeting enrollment to include good conservation stewards, and concentrating payments on conservation enhancement activities that generate additional resource benefits. Additionally, NRCS has instituted several internal controls.
Several witnesses recommended using CSP acres to grow biofuel crops like switchgrass, and Kathleen Merrigan, director of the Agriculture, Food, and Environment Program at Tufts University, made a case for Congress enhancing the CSP program by expanding technical assistance and creating a universal application.
Why do I have to fill out one form for this program, another form for that program? It's just a bureaucratic nightmare. Farmers are there to farm. They don't want to be writing form after form. And the NRCS agents that we work with, too, have limited availability in terms of their time. So we'd like to see a universal application for all NRCS programs for farmers. And then we need more NRCS assistance for farmers. There's a statutory cap on technical assistance, meaning that NRCS, government employees, and other technical service providers can only spend so much time helping farmers guide their way through this complicated program. And we need more help. We need to lift that cap in this next Farm Bill.
Kathleen Merrigan, director of the Agriculture, Food, and Environment Program at Tufts University. Ethanol industry leaders are alerting Congress to the need for the nation to greatly expand its capacity to transport the alternative fuel from mainly Midwestern production areas to the more populated coastal regions. Monty Shaw is president of the Iowa Renewable Fuels Association. Shaw says rail and trucking must be improved and that new dedicated pipelines could also play a role in the future. Shaw is urging that future legislation aimed at boosting ethanol output should not only set production goals, but also address the ethanol transportation problem. North Dakota Representative Earl Pomeroy has introduced legislation that would extend for 5 years an expiring production tax credit for businesses that develop wind energy. Proponents say the extension is necessary to provide the long-term stability that is needed for the development of major wind projects. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
University of Illinois researchers say they have discovered that eating broccoli and tomatoes in combination is better at shrinking prostate tumors than eating the vegetables alone. John Erdman is a professor of food science and human nutrition at the U of I, and he joins us now by telephone to talk about the study. Good afternoon.
Well, good afternoon.
How did you discover that broccoli and tomatoes have, and I don't know if this is scientific or not, but a symbiotic relationship when it comes to prostate cancer?
Well, we know from epidemiological type studies that consumption of tomato products or broccoli products independently by men lower the risk of prostate cancer compared to men who don't consume very much of the individual products. Our laboratory has been interested for some time in tomato components, whole tomato and the bioactive components in tomato. And Dr. Elizabeth Jeffrey, who's also in my department and right down the hall, has been interested in broccoli and the bioactive components in broccoli. So it was a natural mix for us to get together and say and ask the question whether the combination is better than the single components alone.
Did you discover that and talk about that over lunch, or how did that go about?
Well, actually, she and I arrive very early in the morning and generally share a cup of coffee before others arrive, and it was a natural outcome of those kinds of conversations. So we were able to get funding to do the study, and we're very excited that, in fact, our hypothesis was true, that the combination was better than the individual foods themselves. We felt it would be true because the particularly carotenoids in, and that's the pigments, particularly the red pigments in tomato, lycopene being one of those, the components of tomato look like they act in a different manner to protect against cancer than components of broccoli, primarily the sulfur compounds, which tend to detoxify carcinogens. So we thought that they would work better in combination.
And you did this study in rats, is that correct?
That's correct. We've done a number of different studies using different animal models, particularly rats. As you well know, cancer is a long, long process. In particular, prostate cancer takes 20 to 30 years to fully develop. So one has to use other models, and the rat turns out to be a pretty good one in this regard. There's a portion of the prostate that gets cancer just like humans do, and there's a similar metabolism. So we thought that the rat would be a good model to, in a relatively shorter term, get the answers to our questions.
Let's put the task where the rubber hits the road and ask you, okay, how much broccoli and tomatoes do I need to eat? I'm 51 years old.
Okay, so the epidemiology suggests that 3 to 5 servings a week of tomato products or 3 to 5 servings a week of broccoli is sufficient to lower prostate cancer by about 40%. In our animal trials, we provided them with tomato powder or broccoli powder or both, and at somewhat higher levels than the epidemiology would suggest. And if you then convert that to, you know, allowing for sizes of the species, et cetera, it does come out to about 1.5 cups of broccoli to about 2.5 cups of fresh tomato or a cup of tomato sauce daily. We think less can be very helpful, but this is what we did in this particular trial.
Does it matter whether or not I eat these vegetables raw or cooked?
Well, interestingly, both for broccoli and for tomato products, mild heating is better. You get more of the bioactives absorbed. We call that bioavailability when you have mild heating. So steaming or 2 or 3 minutes of cooking of your broccoli or stir frying for a short period of time. In the same regard, tomato sauce would be a little bit better than raw tomatoes. And we're not discouraging the consumption of these raw products, but it actually get a better uptake of these bioactives with mild heating.
Why does this work?
Well, the matrix of foods is such that, as an example with the red pigment lycopene, it's caught up in crystal structures within the tomato, and those aren't readily available for our digestive enzymes. And if you cook a little bit, it kind of melts away, degrades the matrix. And in the same regard, broccoli, you know, broccoli has a lot of fiber and matrix materials that if you soften that up, it allows us to absorb the components better.
Thank you very much, Professor Erdman.
You're most welcome.
University of Illinois Professor of Food Science and Human Nutrition, John Erdman. Joining us now for our look at the cash grain market is Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing in Lexington, Illinois. Good afternoon, Bill.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Export bids along the Gulf strengthening today. Did it carry over into the interior?
Didn't see a lot of strength out here in the country. We did, like you said, the Gulf did get a little bit better, but it's kind of been back and forth compared to the other markets. The processor bids really over the last week on corn were really the weak link here. And, I mean, we saw some double-digit drops in basis here since a week ago on interior processor corn basis.
How full is the pipeline?
Well, I think it's fairly full. I think we definitely bought more grain as we saw the big up move there on Friday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. I think we saw some cash movement of grain due to some increases in margin requirement in that. People that had grain hedged need to maybe move a little bit to generate some cash. You know, when you're in that situation, it's hard to expect the basis is going to improve much.
If futures are to continue their bull run rally, to what degree do you think that basis might have to take a lead over the next 60 to 90 days?
I'm not sure that the basis will take the lead you know, assuming the scenario that you're talking. I think that the futures probably are taking the lead here, and the basis may kind of take a back seat. We always go through this period as you get into midwinter, I guess I'd call it, where the roads are posted, and you get, you know, the people that have moved the grain, that wanted to move the grain for the early winter have already moved it, and you know, there kind of is a slowing of cash off the farm into the elevators. When you get in that situation, you may see some basis improvement again, I think, but I think right now the buyers are focusing on getting themselves covered out here into the deferred months some, so that they're, you know, they don't have to be concerned if we get into a weather problem down the road, for example.
Your prices today?
Cash corn, 382. New crop, 359. Beans, 678. New, 732.
Thank you much, Bill.
Thank you.
Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing in Lexington, Illinois. Your AM 580 newscast is next.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. The Ogallala Sioux Tribe in South Dakota says Chief Illiniwek's Indian regalia is being used improperly and should be returned. The regalia was purchased from the late Frank Fools Crow, an Ogallala ceremonial chief in the 1980s. Chief Illiniwek supporters say the Ogallala tribe endorsed its use. But a Native American group on the University of Illinois campus says the Ogallala Sioux Executive Board passed a resolution this month against the use of the regalia in Chief Illiniwek appearances. Illinois Governor Rob Blagojevich has named Ginger Ostro as his new budget director. She's been deputy director of the budget office for nearly 4 years. Ostro replaces John Filan, who is moving to a new job in the administration. Filan will become one of the governor's top managers, overseeing several state agencies. State officials say 2006 was the safest year on Illinois roadways in more than 80 years. There were 1,267 deaths on Illinois roads last year. That's down nearly 100 deaths from 2005 and the lowest total since 1924. 13 women state senators in Indiana are proposing a bill that would require vaccinations for Indiana girls against a sexually transmitted disease that can cause cancer. They would add the vaccine against human papilloma virus to the several booster shots required for middle school children. Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels says he has not decided whether to seek re-election next year, but he's amassing a campaign war chest as if he is. According to a report filed with the Indiana Election Division, Daniels has nearly $2.6 million in campaign cash on hand. A proposal to ban smoking in bars and restaurants in Peoria may go to the voters. Peoria City Councilman Chuck Graeb says he'll ask the council next week to put a non-binding smoking referendum on the April 17th ballot. A statewide smoking ban is pending in the Illinois legislature, but Graeb says waiting on lawmakers would be a cop-out. He says it's time for Peoria to come out of the dark ages and protect its citizens. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Mike Tenera of T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Good afternoon, Mike.
How you doing, Dave?
I am doing very well. Thanks for filling in for Peter Levitt, who, by the way, is at a conference in San Antonio. I think Ed Kieser's there, too.
Yeah, I talked to Ed yesterday, and he is down there in San Antonio at the American Meteorological Society conference.
Let's go ahead and begin in Brazil today, where the center-south parts of that nation is too wet. Will they see some net drying?
Well, it certainly looks like they will begin to dry out. They're already doing that. We didn't have quite a bit of rain across portions of the country there, and that led to some flooding. Some areas had nearly a foot of rain over a two-week period, and it is a lot of rain. On the other hand, for their standards, they normally average around 4 to 4.5 inches. So it wasn't a huge amount, but it certainly was enough to lead to some problems. And now what we're having in that region is more or less some warmer and sunnier weather for the next 5 to 6 days. So they should be improving there across that portion of Brazil.
It's also been pretty wet in southwestern Argentina. Same question for them.
Yeah, they've had a fairly interesting situation. Argentina, for the most part, has been looking very favorable, but the southwestern portion on the edge of their production region in La Pampa and Buenos Aires, they've been a little bit on the dry side. And what's going to happen now is after high temperatures yesterday and that region reached over 100, it looks like a pretty good chance for thunderstorms there early next week. And we think it's going to be a pretty widespread event for that dry portion, while the remainder of the country has been dry for the past week or so, and they're going to increase their rain chances. So even Argentina, overall, is in pretty good shape.
India needs some timely rain soon, it appears. Otherwise, several crops, mustard, rapeseed, and of course wheat, might have some stress and some less production. Are they going to see any rain?
Well, we've been looking at that this morning, and it doesn't look like there's much of a chance for rain there through at least the next 10 days. There is a fairly potent system that'll cross portions of Iran and move toward the east, but by the time it reaches western India, where the production area is, it should fade away. So we're not expecting that to produce a whole lot of rain. And at this point, it doesn't look like there's going to be much improvement, at least over the next 10 to 14 days across India. So not the best of situations for them.
turn your attention to the Midwest, and let me ask you if parts of the Corn Belt will see snow in the next week.
Oh, we certainly think so. As far as a heavy snowstorm, that looks unlikely, but it does appear that on Sunday in particular, well, let's say it'll begin on Saturday around Kansas into Oklahoma, where they could see a half a foot of snow across cattle areas of western Oklahoma. As that system transitions to the east, it'll lose some of its intensity. But much of Illinois could see 1 to 3 inches of snow out of that, the heaviest across the central portion. And that will mainly be on Sunday. Not a lot of wind with this system, and it will be a quick mover. So, Dave, we're not looking for a major snowstorm here, but more of a typical light snow event for mid-January.
Thanks, Mike.
Have a good one.
You too. Mike Tenera of T-Storm Weather in Chicago.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing. Strategic Farm Marketing is now holding a series of risk management seminars throughout Illinois and Indiana. Information on seminar dates and locations is available at sfarmmarketing.com or 800-383-0046.
And that is today's Closing Market Report. Be sure to tune in at 8:49 Central Time tomorrow morning for our first look at agricultural weather and agricultural markets. This is Dave Dickey.